3, 2, 1.
Here we go.
Welcome to the No Normal Show, brought to you by BPD, a marketing services firm that delivers the future to healthcare's leading brands. This show is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the bold, all focused around the future of healthcare marketing and communications. I'm Stephanie Rearwell, EVP of Engagement here at BPD, and I'm joined by Desiree Duncan, VP of Health Equity and Inclusion, and also Chris Bevelo, Chief Transformation Officer. Hello, Des, and hi, Chris.
Hi, keep on rocking in the free world, question mark.
Oh my gosh, who sang that? Neil Young?
One of the Neils.
I think it's Neil Young.
Well, we know it's not Backstreet Boys.
I can't remember where I put my keys an hour ago, but I can remember Neil Young from 1993. I'm going to go with. Hello. Also, I have a shout out to everybody. New listener, Jenny Ringo from North Memorial Health. Hi, Jenny. Thanks for listening. We're going to have you on the show. I know you said you didn't want to, but we're going to have you on the show. Just saying.
That's going to be fun. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
So today we have a really good show. Today's episode is all about AI. What's happening in the world of AI, marketing, communications. I don't know about you guys, but I think we can't go more than 5 minutes on the show without mentioning AI. But this time we've decided to dive all the way in for the entire time. And that's because there's been a lot going on, as usual. But there's some new interesting things to cover, especially around trust and AI. So here's just a little agenda before we get into it. First, we all have a fun little pop culture moment to share because we've all been watching the same thing and it is very much kind of tied to this topic of tech and AI. Then we've got some new headlines, some new news from OpenAI, a new MIT study that we found really interesting that I think ties to, you know, the future of work and the future of society. And then our main topic is all things trust, AI, you know, consumer sentiment around AI use within marketing and branding, but then also the tech industry and organizational leaders' take on the future of work. So that's our session. I think before we get into it, we've got a couple little housekeeping items. One really exciting one is that we have a webinar coming up called the Future of Health System Chief Marketing Officer Webinar, and it's going to be with you, Chris, and Andy Chang, CMO of UChicago Medicine, and Christine Kotler, CMO of Baptist South Florida. Chris, do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, this is building off the study that we released a couple months ago that's based on about 2 years of really looking at the trend of new threats to the CMO role, but also the new opportunities that the future is bringing. So we'll be diving into that with two actual health systems, truth be told. And so we'll be talking about all those. We'll talk a little bit about the threats, but we're going to focus on the opportunities. So it'll be fun. We may be adding one more. So we'll see. Maybe there's another panelist.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
Wait and see. I'm really excited about that one in August. I've got my calendar marked. What an awesome crew. We'll stay tuned for the last panelist. And just one last note is that, as always, we love to shout out to the No Normal Rewind, which is our newsletter. And it goes through all that we share on the No Normal Show, but also gives some extra insights, all the links, additional stats and facts around the topic of the week. So with that, let's get into it. As I mentioned, Chris and Des, it's been a minute since we've all been kind of on the same media vibe, media circuit. We were all into White Lotus pretty deep there a while back at the beginning of the year. But recently we've all watched Mountainhead. And speaking of tech and AI, Mountainhead is very relevant. So I'll open it up to you all to share. Yeah.
Yeah. So in case you haven't watched it, you know, be wary of some spoiler alerts here. But essentially the movie is about a culmination of all of the tech figureheads that we have been seeing in our lives playing out. But like all of these characters, basically that they meet up at a resort in, I guess, Utah.
That's their house.
Yeah, it's their house, but it's like their mountain house, right? It's not their actual regular residence. They're all meeting up for a boys'
weekend. Yes, it's like his cottage.
One of their 10 houses.
That's
one
right.
One of the 10. But, you know, insanity is ensuing in the rest of the world. And it really just gives that glimpse of like, my goodness, these are the people in charge in a way. And it just, it's too real. It's almost like some of these movies, these films, like nowadays, it feels like it's less like Black Mirror, where it's like this future, like world potential. It's like, it's more like right now. But yeah, they're basically launched this AI. One of the guys on there, he had launched a recent AI, I guess, piece of tech where on the social media, you can create and generate your own videos, and that they're creating all of these fakes and deep fakes, and it's just really causing complete and utter chaos. But yeah, I'm just kind of curious, Chris, your take on this Boys Weekend.
It's by the guy who did Succession. So if you like Succession, that style of dialogue and character development, it's great. I will say the twist was kind of not needed. It kind of took it in a different place. It was still entertaining, but it is, to your point, such a critique on these tech bros that are worshipped, these tech oligarchs, whatever you want to call them. And they are apparently based on real folk. It's kind of hard to tell who's supposed to be who, but they are definitely based on folks like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg and that kind of thing. The creators have come out and said that. But yeah, the whole AI thing, essentially the premise is that the AI deepfake is so realistic, you can't tell the difference. So reality kind of goes out the window, and it is causing upheaval around the world where you have factions that are ready to fight each other. And then they see a video of like a massacre and they're like, that's it, we're going. And they start wars and battles and all this strife because of what they're seeing online, which is completely not true. Again, that's happening already.
And like the president calls them and it's like, we need to talk. What world does the president just call?
Yeah. And they're just aloof about it.
They're not only aloof, they see it as like a positive. Like, it's about time we shake the tree, reorganize things. It literally gets to a point where they're like, oh, we could totally run, I think it's Colombia or Venezuela, and they take over a country. And it does not seem that far-fetched the way they do it. Especially given our friend Elon and the chainsaw and Doge and all that. And they're like, well, we could totally run this South American country better than they could. Let's leverage this to have our own kind of utopian tech world, which also sounds a lot like Peter Thiel, which if you saw his recent interview. Anyway, it's very entertaining. It is very creepy and scary and not that far removed from where we're at or where we're probably going to be. Sorry. That's me, Stephanie.
Yeah. Well, it was a perfect blend of comedy and parody, so it was very entertaining. But yes, as you all have said, it's very much a Black Mirror, but make it now. I think it's very tech navel-gazing, in my opinion. And I guess my takeaway would be we're building these systems that let ourselves set ourselves on fire, if you will. I think we've already done that a little bit with social media. We've talked about it. But I'm hearing you all talk about it. It's kind of ironic because I know all three of us are very bullish on AI and tech. But yet, I think we also continue to look at both the positive and negative outcomes.
Oh, totally. Maybe we will hear, but I had a dinner with my family and one of my daughters is graduating from college and her degree is in digital audiences, which is pretty cool. But I'm trying to talk to her about AI and she just will not hear it because it's terrible. It's sucking up all of our energy and our water and the people in Memphis can't breathe. All of her points are true, but I'm trying to be like, hey, you kind of need to understand this. I understand it's going to be our new tech overlord, but as we'll hear shortly, your future may depend on understanding it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as we get into these topics, I think we will hit both sides of it a little bit more. So let's move into our headlines. There's a couple interesting headlines. Touch on them. The first is this really interesting continued anticipation around some hardware that OpenAI may be building. Maybe a month ago or so, Sam Altman sat down with Johnny Ive. Johnny Ive is the Apple iPhone designer. And they mentioned in their sit-down interview, it was like in a coffee shop or a bar, that OpenAI has acquired startup, $6.5 billion deal. And what came out of that was this development of a new hardware device. At the time, they said it was a pocket-sized, screen-free core device that will kind of be the new iPhone, if you will. And then more recently, rumors are swirling that it could be a pen. But anyway, I know you all had been looking at this. What was your take when you saw this? What do you think about the future of hardware?
I let Des give a real take before I give my take.
That's all you. No? I want to hear your take. Yeah, I'm just, it's been lackluster. Like any update has been lackluster. So I'll wait until I see it.
Yeah, I just imagine like, remember how Steve Jobs used to like launch the iPad or something? So it's like a giant stage and they're like, is everybody ready? And there's like a curtain and the curtain draws back. And there's a table with just a pen sitting on it. And one of the most famous lines is he says, I gave her my heart and she gave me a pen. So that's what I think about when I hear like, ooh, Jonathan Ives is going to design something and it's going to be a pen. Unless that pen's going to like fly me to San Francisco for half the price. Not sure it's really.
That sounds, it might. Sorry.
Who knows?
Oh, if it's like a wand? Now that's different. If you had said a wand, like, hey, branding idea, OpenAI, you should call it a wand. And all of a sudden now when you unveil it, it's going to be like, ooh, look at this wand. But if you call it a pen, I'm not going to go there.
I always did want to be Harry Potter, so I will take a wand. Okay, so we'll wait and see, and hopefully there'll be more developments in this space, and maybe it will be more than a pen, because Altman says it's going to be the fastest 100 million unit product launch ever. It's going to redefine AI. It's going to redefine hardware forever. So that's a pretty big promise, so we'll see. Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
He promised that.
He did. He teased
it. Did he mention a pen?
No, they did not mention a pen. They said it was going to be a pocket-sized screen-free third core device, whatever that means. And then in the last week, the rumors have started flying, you know how they do, of like people who know something about something say that it's going to be a pen.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Can't wait.
So another headline we have, this one hit the news feeds, I think last week or so, and started some interesting debates. Which is a new MIT study that suggests that generative AI is eroding critical thinking skills. So this was done with a brain scan study, and it tested users who created content or wrote or researched with ChatGPT and produced essays. And then they compared that to folks who wrote original content or folks who Googled and used a wide variety of research. And so the finding, I don't think this is terribly surprising, but I'll see what you guys think. The finding was that generative AI users showed lower brain activity, and the EEG scans showed that cognitive thinking would be in decline if we all lean in.
In some ways, it feels a part of this larger, like a mega trend of like, are our brains going to work anymore in a few years? I'm thinking of the report from earlier this year around reading comprehension going down for students, kids in grade school, and then around college students and hearing from professor friends of mine, it's like, oh, these kids, they don't read books anymore. And I don't know, it feels kind of daunting. I know that folks are like, there was a recent article, I think just this week, from Harvard Gazette about discussing interventions around this. And it's like, are we just kind of running with the headlines around this or actually digging deeper into what's happening? So for example, like I know for me, reading was always kind of tough in school just because my brain isn't wired that way. Had there been Spotify, audiobooks, what have you, probably would have done a lot better. But this idea of how do we keep that part of our brain still active? You know, is it discussion? Is it really actually sitting with things? But oftentimes we do kind of lean into that. I'm just going to copy and paste and just kind of keep it pushing. I don't know. Chris, your thoughts?
I guess it's not surprising. I mean, isn't that what AI is supposed to do? Mm-hmm. Do things that humans could do and do it better. So if it does it, then why would you be using your brain to that level? So in that sense, it's not really surprising. I guess I would expect that. But yeah, it has broader implications. I think the stuff you're talking about, Des, is 100% real. So I do get concerned about the ability to think critically and all that kind of thing. And it's also, sometimes it reminds me of like, oh, you know, like calculators will destroy people's ability to do math. And it's like, well, why do I need to do math if I have a calculator, right? Like I shouldn't be using my brain cells to add difficult numbers when I can just do it on a machine. But that assumes that I'm using it then to do other things that are worthy. And if AI takes away all the worthy things, which is a real possibility, when you get to the headlines we're going to talk about later, we're going to have to figure out what are people going to be doing if they don't have jobs? If the AI overlords take over X percent of jobs and people are just getting universal income, which just seems far-fetched, what are they going to be doing? Because if they're just sitting around doing crossword puzzles, we're in trouble.
Oh, we love a good crossword puzzle. Yeah, I think I'm just, I know I'm an optimist on this subject, but I just, I won't say I throw out studies like this. It's interesting. I like to read through them. I like to consider them. But I'm totally with you, Chris, on the calculator metaphor and example, because I do remember, you know, back in the day, especially with scientific calculators, those just made us more powerful. Those just made us all better mathematicians. Those just made us all, you know, be able to understand concepts quicker and faster. And you can think of almost any technology throughout history that would have had this similar controversy. And here we are. So I think we've all, you know, all along the way been stressing AI as a supplement, not a substitute. It's a thinking partner. And in fact, when it's a thinking partner, it actually levels up our ability to be strategic. So anyway, I'm a little frustrated by studies like this causing controversy. Go ahead, Des.
And in a way, it saved lives. Think about all of the calculations we could have gotten wrong when building that bridge, right? Think about all the bridges that have collapsed in the past that don't anymore. So like having these tools helps support in that way for the larger reasoning capabilities. But yeah, Chris, you answered.
I mean, as somebody who lives in Minneapolis, the not very old, massive interstate bridge fell into the river. I'm not sure the bridges are better, but like, here's the danger. Right? Math is one thing. History is another example. Like, why memorize history if you can just look it up on Google? You don't memorize history for the facts. You memorize it to learn about what happened and why. When that goes away, that's bad news. And we've always seen that, I guess. But people that don't understand the past and people that misunderstand the past, it makes it easy to manipulate what the past really was. We don't learn the important lessons to move forward. So,
yeah.
If AI takes over all that and we're just sitting doing crosswords, no shade to crosswords, Stephanie. I love crosswords, not as much as Wordle or Connections, but I do love crosswords. But like, you can't, we're going to be in trouble if people don't have something meaningful in their lives. I can guarantee you that's going to be true.
My last, this might tie into as we get into the jobs conversation, but the last kind of to that point, Chris, I think that any type of tech like this, especially AI, it just separates those who are hardwired for hard and love thinking and love the critical thinking and love the strategic element and love using AI to learn, as opposed to those who are going to want to take the shortcut. So I don't know. It's almost an interesting.
That's about a 15 to 85 ratio you just described there.
Well, that's depressing.
I don't think most people want to take the hard path. They don't.
I have more faith in humanity than that.
I'm not shading humanity. I'm just like, you know, people want to live their life. They don't have to work through hard challenges. Mm. I don't know.
Okay, so let's get into our main topic here, which is continuation of these topics. So our main topic really started by some new information around consumer trust in AI-generated content. But from there, we have tentacles going everywhere. So we're going to start there, and it was a study that was published by Harvard Chan's Center for Health Communication, and they did a study around AI-generated news specifically. And so they had content that had AI-generated labels, and it was fully disclosed. This was created in collaboration with AI. I don't know what the exact language was, but there was a disclosure label. And so the majority of study participants were uncomfortable with any content that was generated in partnership with AI. Now, my little caveat here is this was around news. So I think we have to consider where the state of news is and the trust of news already. But it does get us thinking about things like, you know, marketing and how AI is used. And I'm not just talking about generating content, right? But in all realms like generated video or even data or machine learning. So let me just pause there and see what you all thought about that study.
Christopher.
Des? I don't know. Like, my thoughts are just, I'm not surprised. I think there will be an issue here for quite some time until all of this becomes way more mainstream. I'm not surprised that people don't trust it just off the bat. But what's ironic is that relative to what? You don't trust AI, but you trust social media, you trust the internet, you trust news. Just because data is presented that's not AI generated, why would you trust that any more than AI generated stuff? I mean, humans are, it's again, this brings me back to like, ooh, we can't have self-driving cars because they kill a person once a month. Well, human-driven cars kill hundreds of people a month. So it's got to be relative, but I just don't think we're there yet as a society. So it's not surprising in that way to me.
Yeah, it feels a part of the typical cycle of brand new thing happens. Like, what is this? I don't trust it. Like, you know, vaccine, no. But we saw it with online banking, right? Like, I'm not putting all my finances and all that on the internet. Here we are, like, using the complete internet for the Venmo and the Cash Apps. Like, I didn't realize that we're at the stage where you can put your phone up to the little swipe thing and play through Apple Pay now. I'm like, wow.
That's been around for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, the pay with your hand at Amazon. I'm obsessed with that. I now walk to Kroger and I'm like, do this with my hand. And I'm like, where's your, get with a program.
At Kroger even?
No, they you're don't.
Like your palm print? I'm trying, your palm print?
Have you, Des, you're in Seattle, so you probably, so Amazon, any Amazon location or Amazon owned, you know, like Whole Foods, you pay with your palm.
Apparently, I'm so a Luddite and I'm like paying with checks compared to everyone else.
This is why it's so funny that people are all worried about this government-run database of... We're all voluntarily giving our eye scans and our thumbprints and our palm prints and our DNA. Like, we're just like, hey, 1999, you can give me your DNA and I'll tell you what your great-grandfather country came from. Oh, we can't have some giant... Anyway, Des, we so cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. But I mean, that goes to prove the point around we will do it if it's something that we feel that we'll benefit from. If it's getting us what we want, then yeah, take all of my data, take all my blood and all of that. But if it's something that we're even kind of remotely like, I don't know.
New. It's new. Yeah. One thing that's interesting, as the big, beautiful bill has just passed the House, which means it will become law, we will not get into all of that other than silver lining, outlawing any state-driven AI regulation. Like, literally, states couldn't regulate it. And the Senate took that out. So as far as I know, we are still able to regulate AI. That legislation will probably come back. But so at least there will be some controls on it. But I just thought that's kind of like breaking news. A new breaking news thing.
It is breaking news.
Yeah.
Next time we dig into some of the healthcare specifics of what landed there.
Yeah, turns out there's, you know, like $1 trillion impact on healthcare for now. Okay. We'll come back to it.
Put that in a little box and set it over in the corner for a second.
We'll just set it over there.
Okay. So back to consumer sentiment on AI.
To a more positive.
Yeah. I think your point is key, which is we'll give up a lot for convenience. And that's been proven time and time again, whether it's data or anything. And so just because there are stats out there floating around about consumer sentiment on AI, that doesn't mean stop your agenda. That doesn't mean stop moving, because there are also stats that show that those who are more familiar with it are more excited. Younger generations are more optimistic. And specifically, healthcare is an area where people, Americans, based on the stats, see promise with AI. They have some reservations, yes. But anyway, I just think it's really critical to don't let that stop progress or stop teams from exploring. So you talked about it earlier, Chris, on I think some of the more recent difficult discussions that are happening in the headlines. And I think that they're part of why this whole trust issue is really bigger than it seems on the surface. I'll just hit these three quick headlines and we can discuss. But there's in the last week, news came out that Meta is rolling out AI to handle 90%+ of its risk and privacy assessment. So essentially replacing human reviewers with the really, I would argue, important stuff around risk assessments and privacy and security and societal impacts. No big deal. That was a shift that came from NPR. There was another piece of news where Amazon's CEO has said that he expects that AI will reduce the number of corporate jobs and change our way work is done. And then doubling down on that just this morning hit from Wall Street Journal around a whole slew of CEOs that are talking about AI and jobs. So I might throw this to you first, Chris, because I know you've been watching this for quite some time. And, you know, it absolutely exacerbates this discussion around trust.
Yeah. And I mean, even more recent than that is Microsoft announcing 9,000 people laid off. 9,000 people. So, I mean, this goes to trust, right? There's just so much we could talk about here. Having presented on the Joe Public 2030 book, and Stephanie, you've probably had this experience for a while. We've been presenting on that for 3 years now. And in there, one of the trends, Copernican Consumer, is about technology. We've touched on it, right? Wearables, AI, blockchain, really changing how consumers engage healthcare. And I can remember presenting to health systems where physicians have really not approved of throwing AI in there, right? They always just like, whoa, wait a second, AI, they're not going to blah, blah, blah. Just very defensive about AI. And in the beginning, I just kind of let it go. And then for a while, I was kind of like, hey, don't shoot the messenger. This is real. Like, people are looking at AI. And I think I've been saying, not to those groups, because they would probably throw me out the room, but even on this podcast, what doctors do, there's a lot of what doctors do, but so much of what they do is assess data and act on data, right? They use data in all kinds of diagnostics, all kinds of tests, all kinds of evaluation to assess a situation, a patient, and determine what is going on with that person. And then from that, dictate a course to go forward. That's all data. And so it seems inevitable to me that eventually AI is going to be able to do what doctors can do. And this is really kind of showing that. And I know there's a lot of people that don't want to hear that, but again, it's just data. And we're not there today. Like, I don't know that I would trust an AI doctor to diagnose something by itself, but I personally would not have an issue with my doctor saying, oh, we've got an AI tool that helps us, and that makes us feel a lot more confident in this, or it kind of uncovered the potential for that, so we want to do an extra test. But that's me, because I'm in the business. So we'll have to see how trust and all this comes together. But to me, the only thing surprising about that particular study is that it's here.
So we'll link it in the show notes so people can dig in more. But just this really interesting announcement around this area of doctors and AI, where Microsoft says that their new system can diagnose patients 4 times more accurately than human doctors. So we'll link that so you can spend time with it. But that's a pretty big deal, pretty big announcement. It's their quote unquote step towards medical superintelligence. Obviously, we don't want to just believe it because they have a reason for saying that. But it really goes to what you're saying, Chris, which is data is the basis of knowledge worker jobs, and that's doctors included. And it's not all of the job, but it's the foundation of it. And so that raises all these larger questions. Des, what are your notes?
You know, I might take this into a little different territory, but it kind of continues our earlier conversations. What is the end game here? If we're bringing in AI and we are going to boost business production with fewer humans, what makes your company run and successful is that humans are actually spending the money that we earn from our jobs on your products. So if none of us have jobs and none of us then have healthcare that employers are giving to insurers that then takes us in to actually go to these doctors, then what are we doing? How is anything kind of growing? When I listen to these conversations, I can't help but just think about, like, none of this is actually going to end up in service of what the actual need is, which is driving business. The biggest business objective is having people with money that are able to spend on your products, the things that you're selling. So I don't know. I guess this is my question.
That's why you have some of the leading advocates for something like universal income or like Elon Musk. Because those folks realize, like, well, the economy doesn't work that way. You can't replace 10%, 20%, 50% of the jobs and have the economy function. It just won't work. Mm-hmm. So what are you going to do, right? These people don't have to work, theoretically. Again, this is all theoretical, but kind of creepy, kind of close. That's where you're going to have something like universal income. But, I mean, now if you say that out loud, you get called a bunch of dirty names, right? That's you can't say that without being called some political names, which I won't get into, but that's the reality, right? And I think, like, it's the Jurassic Park line, right? What's his name? I can't think of his name. The scientist in the original Jurassic Park who says, your scientists were so busy figuring out how they could do that they didn't ask to stop and ask why, right? When he's talking about DNA and dinosaurs, that's where we're at. And the problem is out of the bag, the toothpaste is out of the tube. You, like, even that's the conversation of how do we regulate it here doesn't mean it will be slowed down. Because I mean, China will keep going, or someone in Europe, or anybody else. So it just feels like that's the path forward, and there's not much that's going to stop it. So we got to be realistic about what you're saying. What is the ultimate outcome of this? And obviously, that's going to hit healthcare. Like, we're going to bring it all the way back to what this podcast is about. It's going to hit healthcare marketers. It's going to hit, you know, our organizations. So I just think it's better to kind of hit it head on and be and talk about it. But boy, is that hard to do.
Can I give you my, you know, I tend to Pollyanna a little bit. You already are. I mean, and I'm not blind to the consequences, but I just want to paint the, here's the positive outcome scenario. There's obviously negative outcome scenarios. There's disaster scenarios, but the positive outcome scenario is a couple things. Number one, and now I'm just repeating Sam Altman Kool-Aid, but the positive outcome is AI solves these big problems that humans have not been able to solve with massive data compute. And so I think, like, as a human, no matter what your role is, whether it's healthcare clinical or healthcare marketing or whatever, it's asking the question of, like, what is the problem that we've never been able to solve that we could now solve? That puts human value through the roof. The other interesting scenario that comes to mind for me is AI enables everybody to be entrepreneurial. And it's that overly optimistic view of these autonomous companies or individuals being able to start businesses. But even inside organizations, think of the innovation that can happen if people approach it with critical thinking skills and if people take the reins on, I want to do what's hard and not what's lazy. I also think it would be an awesome outcome for us to be able to imagine being able to produce far more in far less time and actually spend time doing the things we were built to do, like socialize and, you know. So I'm going to stop there because I know I get a little too fired up, but, like, I think we can build that world if we march toward it and also consider how do we prevent the consequences.
I mean, we don't need AI to tell us the solution to healthcare.
We don't?
It's socialized medicine. I'm sorry. Okay. Like, the healthiest countries have a socialized medicine program. It's also the least expensive. So do we really need AI to tell us that? Do we really need AI to tell us that AI is going to take 50% of your human's jobs? The way to resolve that is universal income. Does that mean we're going to, we still have to do it. We still have to agree to it. And I think these solutions, you don't have to agree with me on socialized medicine. That's fine. But these solutions aren't that mysterious. They require will. They require collaboration and cooperation. And all of those seem to be in short order. So that's why I wish I could crawl into your brain, Stephanie, and live there for a week, because it would make me a much happier person.
And I only bring it up for just those that are key decision makers and CEOs to really think about that. Some of the decisions around, okay, we're going to get rid of the humans so that we can have all of the robots do the things. Like, what are the actual implications of that? Think a little bit further. But cool beans.
Okay, well.
This is wide-ranging. This is very deep. And thank God Stephanie is on here, because nobody would ever listen to my old man on the lawn, dour, sad perspective on life.
Well, your perspective
but
is,
you know,
I
what?
Think
you know what
realistic.
Keeps me going? This is what keeps me going.
Absurdist
this is how
peanuts.
I stay functional.
Wow.
If you're listening, I'm holding up the magic beans of candy and sustenance. They're called
said
circus
no
peanuts. They're the most amazing candy.
I think there's a metaphor in there for the topic.
I won't say what I think about AI and circus peanuts.
Okay. Well, when you start with Mountain Head and end with circus peanuts, then, you know, there's a whole maze in between. So we love to talk about the hard things on this show and think about all implications, big and small. But with that, thank you all for joining. Des, thank you, Chris.
Thank
loved
you,
this
Stephanie.
Whole journey for us.
Yeah, love it. What a great send-off for love it for us.
Do we recommend Mountain Head?
Yes.
I think we do, right?
We do. I do. Yeah. Des?
We do.
One single watch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't like yeah,
it's funny.
Watch it six times. It's not Wicked, mm-hmm. but anyway.
It's no Wicked.
It's no Wicked. Yeah. So I'm like, how do I wrap after that? Thank you all for listening. And we love to hear from you. Shoot us an email if you've got anything, if you disagree with anything we said. I'm sure there's 100 things to disagree with that we just talked about. So our email is nonormal@bpdhealthcare.com. And until next time, don't be satisfied with the normal, because the world is not normal in all of this. And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
3, 2, 1.